This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Celeste Quinn is away. I'm Tom Rogers. And on the program today, it's our monthly Computers and You segment, a topic that we take up once a month on the third Monday of each month. And this time around, our guest is Peter Kimball, the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. And this show is about your questions on computers. So your questions are welcome, and we encourage you to give us a call. Our telephone number is in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. In the wherever we're listening, wherever you're listening in the continental U.S. and maybe beyond, I'm not really sure if you can go beyond the continental U.S. with this, but toll-free, the number is 800-222-9455. Again, the number is 333-WILL, 1-800-222-9455. WILL. And Peter, welcome back.
Thank you. It's always nice to be back.
Been a little while since we've done the show.
It has.
And in the meantime, I've gone out and gotten a couple of purchases myself, including a brand new iPhone. And I was so pleased with myself and back in March and thought that was a great purchase and worth the money spent. And now in May or in June, I find that the bottom has fallen out.
Yes,
not literally of the iPhone, but the people are going to be buying them for a lot less right now,
and much more capable iPhones. But at least you didn't buy it the week before they announced the new one.
That's true. That's true. Although I heard that there may be some compensation for those people. They may get a coupon.
Yes,
or something
there
like
is
that.
A point at which, and I don't know what that date is, at which the old version was no longer available from the Apple Store, and depending on where you bought the online Apple Store, and depending on where you bought it, if you did buy one recently, check and see if with whomever you purchased it from to see if you qualify for the update or some kind of an upgrade.
Right. So the new iPhones have a faster a system for you can get onto a faster network.
You can, a much faster network in places where it's supported, which it's what's called the 3G or 3 generation network, and it's available in 300 to 400 of the major metropolitan areas around the U.S.
So otherwise, you can't use that just everywhere. There are other places that
yes.
aren't served by that.
There are some places out in the relative boonies where you still will not get those faster speeds. The interesting thing is the older iPhones are now not moving very well on eBay and places because everybody wants to wait until I think it's July 11th to
That's
buy
right.
one of the new ones.
And
so.
And they're certainly not moving for $399 or whatever you happen to buy it for before.
No, but that's always the case. That's yeah. always the case. There will be, for current iPhone owners, a software update to the new software.
So the forward march of technology claims your money,
yes.
whether you buy it now or buy it later, I guess.
Well, the good news is if you buy a new iPhone after July 11th, you've got a good year probably until something new comes out.
And you don't have to pay so much.
That's true.
Such a deal. Let's go to a caller on line one in Whiteheath. Good afternoon. You're on with Peter Kimball.
Hi. Now, this is for problems, right?
Yes.
Your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I'm turning my computer on and trying to get started on the Internet, I get this box that says the user environment, and it says Windows cannot load user's profile, but has logged you on with another user profile or something like that. So I get on then, and I can surf the Internet, but is this a major problem? Have you ever heard of this?
It's not uncommon. Essentially, profiles are a set of preferences and settings that can be stored for you. And I'm just looking up to see. Are you using Windows XP? Do you happen
yes,
to know?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And let me see if I can find that. The bottom line is no. It's not going to present a problem. A profile was set up at one point. That profile was apparently deleted, and so you can pretty much ignore that message. It's not any problem in terms of security. And I'm just looking to see if I can find a quick reference for you.
Okay.
And so let's see. The most common solution is to delete the user profile and re-log on. Well,
which is user profile?
Right. You'll want to back up data. Let's see. I wouldn't even worry too much about that.
Okay.
When did this start happening?
Well, you know, I think it happened a few weeks ago when we were having all that terrible lightning and stuff. It just seemed like it happened around that time. We have a satellite dish for our computer, and so we've tried to call Hughes. They don't seem, or that's who we get it from, and they don't seem to, they didn't solve it. That I don't know if that's their problem or not.
It's probably not their problem.
Oh, okay. My son thought it wasn't their problem.
No, so. The user profile is something that is stored on the hard drive. It is updated periodically, and it could well have been related to the storm. It's not likely, but it could have happened that when Windows was updating that profile, there was a problem caused perhaps by a surge or a lightning bolt. Didn't do permanent damage, one hopes, to your hard drive, but it could have corrupted the file when it was in the process of being written.
Uh-huh.
So the thing that you'll probably want to do, it sounds like your son has had a little bit of experience with this, so could perhaps...
Well, he doesn't live here. He's
oh, okay.
in England.
Oh, well, then I guess he can't just drop by.
when he stops by, yeah.
But deleting a user profile, essentially it's the information about your sign-on.
Okay.
That the other thing I would do, since this is stored on the hard drive, is there are... a number of utilities that you can run, and you might want to just run one of those to check to make sure that the hard drive is not having any difficulties. There's a program on Windows called CheckDisk. Yes, and it's
okay.
Actually spelled without any vowels and without consonants. It's CHKDSK.
Okay.
It's a very simple kind of check, and that's... something that you could do by just going to the start program, the start menu, choosing run, and then just typing, probably just on your system, just typing CHKDSK.
CHKDSK. DSK, okay.
And once you've done that, it'll pop up and it'll check some files and folders. And on Windows XP, you could actually start it up and say that you want to check for files that not only check the file structure to make sure that it's all right, but to actually examine every sector on the hard drive and see if it has any difficulties. That will take much longer to run.
All right, though, to get it cleared up.
Well, that won't necessarily address the problem with the profiles, but it will tell you if there are any problems with the hard drive, because if some of the files that Windows expects to have, and this would be true for your Macintosh as well, can't be read from the hard drive, then you can have all sorts of problems all the way up to Windows or the Macintosh not being able to start.
Well, now, one other problem I have, when I'm surfing the Internet, I usually read the New York Times, and I have problems with that site. Would that be related, do you think?
Did those problems start at about the same time?
Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like I can't, I have to sort of figure out a different way of getting to the site and reading articles and stuff. I have to, I don't know, do it a different way because I can't just do it straightforward. Would it be related, do you think, or not?
Well, let's see. A little more information, perhaps. What happens when you try to just go in as you used to the New York
Well, then
site?
I get this. It's called Web Acceleration Client Error, it's called. And then it suspected satellite link outage, but it's not really out. But maybe at one time it was when I don't know.
Well, the web acceleration client sounds like something that Hughes probably installs to help enhance the speed.
Okay. All right.
And so if that file is having problems...
Then that's them.
That's something that could perhaps be reinstalled because that's not a direct part of the Windows system, but that's a software application that... a lot of web service providers, especially those that have somewhat slower connections, dial-up or satellite, which is not as fast as having a line directly into your home, use some fairly clever trickery to try to store information that is going to be frequently used and download it to you more quickly. And if that's not quite working, then there may be some settings. The software may need to be reinstalled. Essentially, it's a web accelerators are software that tries to reduce your experienced time to access a website. But if they're not working, you can indeed have problems accessing
now,
those websites.
This is the only site that I go to that this happens. So.
Well, and it may be the only site that that Hughes or their essentially their server on their end that handles the web acceleration may be the only site that you visit that they cache in that way that they store information from.
Okay.
So with that particular question in mind, with the web acceleration client, that would be something to make note of that exact error message and try talking to Hughes support about that one.
Yeah.
In terms of the profile, they're perfectly right at Hughes saying it's not their problem.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. All right, well, thanks so much. That was very helpful.
Well, good luck to you.
Okay, I'll need to, thanks.
And thanks for your call. Do you have to have a user profile online?
Well,
I noticed that this happened to me. I think time was when I could launch my computer and I'd be right there on the desktop. And I believe it was when I downloaded another program or installed another program, I started getting the user window before you had to click the user button, the certain profile button before you went to the desktop. What causes that or doesn't cause that, and is that something you just have to deal with if you're not using different users?
Well, the main thing that causes it, of course, is if you have more than one logon or more than one person's settings on the same computer, that has to be stored in the various user profiles. Mm-hmm. With more recent versions of the Windows and the Macintosh, even if you are not using multiple sign-ins, multiple logons, there probably are still some logons, some access accounts, for example, for administrative purposes, that are there that you may not be using. You can, in both the Windows and the Mac system, say you want to bypass that user screen and have it, again, start right up and go straight to the desktop.
So there's a way you can get around that. How do you address that?
On the Macintosh, you have to be an administrator, and you can go into... Oh, I can't remember, and I don't have a Macintosh here in front of me, but I was just doing this a couple of weeks ago.
There's a help menu somewhere that could help.
Well,
that.
Yes, and it is in the system preferences in the control panel, and it is, I would try users and groups. That's the Windows terminology. I think it might be just users on the Macintosh. I can see the little icon in front of me, but I can't quite remember what the wording was before it. I guess I'm a little more visual then. But in both of those programs, and certainly you could choose help. You might need to use help in either Windows or the Macintosh application in reverse, saying, how do I require a password, and then see what they say to do and essentially undo that.
Unrequire it, I guess.
Which does make the system, you would only want to do this with a home system. You would certainly not want to do this with a laptop if it ever leaves, because then people who start it up, it's just like leaving the door open, the lights on, and the welcome mat out, along with a big sign that says, I'm not home, come in.
It's that extra step of security. May not seem important if you have a laptop and you're the only user, but...
Depends on where that is.
That's right.
One hopes that you're the only user and that it doesn't become... somebody else's laptop. We've had some experiences with that.
Mm. Our numbers again for your computer questions for Peter Kimball, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And as I mentioned before, let's hold off. We got another caller coming in. But Peter, you've been doing this for how many years? And your Windows was new, I guess, when you began this?
Oh, I remember Windows in the days when it was barely usable. You couldn't have overlapping windows. Windows essentially became semi-useful about the day of Windows 3.1. That was in the early 90s. But Windows was around from the very early days.
So maybe,
I think the earliest version of Windows that I've got is something called Windows 286, which was a old processor that Intel... made for IBM PCs.
But you could only use one window.
You could use multiple windows, but they couldn't overlap.
Ah,
so okay. You could tile them, but you could not overlap them back in those early days.
And I suppose,
but it was still very cool compared to other things. That was...
four or five windows, the screens would get a little busy.
They would indeed. Yeah. They would indeed.
Let's go to a caller on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Yes, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. I have the problem of a with YouTube. And I am turning on YouTube, and all of the videos that I look at, both the most current or political or the old comic shows, all come up with video no longer available.
Oh, so it's telling you that the video is not available, but not that you simply can't display it.
It says the video is not available. I get the circle that goes around and the black box.
Yes.
And then it pops up, video no longer available. But this is the most current things. I also tried most popular videos being watched now.
Well, it sounds like the message that you're getting, or the message that YouTube is getting you, is not very clear. The video is apparently available. You may not be able to display it. And the most common reason for that, is this something that started recently, or you've never been able to?
I used to be able to, and then it stopped, and then it started again, and I had no problem viewing it, and then it stopped again.
Well, the most common problem that people have had viewing YouTube videos is with a little bit of software that needs to translate or decompress the video. Those are called, for short, codecs. It's just short for compression, decompression. And if you have a problem with your little video opening software, essentially the codec, or you don't have the proper one, then that would make the videos unviewable, and it's possible that that is what YouTube is detecting and saying, sorry, you can't view this, because it seems unlikely that those videos, from what you say, since you're going to the most popular, really are unavailable. So the error message that you're getting sounds like they're just giving you the wrong error message, and what it probably should say is unable to display on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
So what you might want to do at YouTube is type, you can search and look for codecs or
codec is spelled K-O-D-E-C?
No, it's C-O-D-E-C because it's short for compression.
D-O-D-E-C.
It's a kind of a, not exactly an acronym, but it's a contraction of the term compressor decompressor.
I'm sorry, may I interrupt you one more?
Sure.
Are you saying D as in dog?
Yes. C as in cat, O, D as in dog, E, C. Short for compression.
E as in Edward?
E as in Edward. Short for compression, decompression. So if you think of those two words, you can come up with codec. All one together. That's the software. You definitely have perhaps multiple codecs, to give it a plural, installed on your machine. But what you might do is in the help for YouTube, when it says what you need to do, download those particular, they'll say you need to have such and such a bit of software called, called a codec, to be able to view those videos, and that may have become corrupted on your machine. You can double-check that, but if you have access or have somebody with access to the same YouTube videos that you're trying to see, and if they can see it successfully and you can't, then you know the problem is not, as YouTube is saying, that it's not there. It's simply a problem that your machine, for whatever reason, and probably this little bit of software that we're calling a codec, is not the appropriate one or has been damaged or even is not being reported to YouTube as being installed on your machine. The little links and hooks to it may have been lost. So that's what I would try doing.
I will. I appreciate that. I do want to add one other question to it. I was thinking that sometime YouTube will have, as you sign on, a featured video. And then it'll be, and I'll touch in there and set it. I'll open it. And in turn, I can open that.
So you can open the featured video.
Yeah, I've done that a couple of times.
And it displays properly, and it shows, and it runs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that begins to shoot down the theory of the codec not working, because the same sort of software that would be used for the display of the featured video would be what would be used for the other videos as well. So my next suggestion then, although you could still go the and look at the codec route, would be to go to YouTube. There is a user support form, and you could also try this via a Google search, such as can't display YouTube videos. a search phrase such as that, and you'll probably hit a number of links that will hopefully, some of them, without having to look past the first couple pages or so.
Fine, I will do that, and I will also do the their help section.
Yes, and their help section may be a very, and one of the key things that you would want to point out in the help section, if you leave a note, is, or a request, or a bit of information about a problem, is that you can view the featured video, but you can't view any others. Is that true? No others work for you, or some others work?
Oh, he's
gone.
I think
okay. Well, that's the other thing. To check, tell them whether all of them work or none of them work, other than the featured video.
All right. One other question that I had, maybe is it necessarily a software problem? Might it be that, and I don't know whether YouTube, when they put up featured videos, pays attention to whether or not they may be copywritten, or the person who put up, or the or network, or supplier that put up the video has decided to keep it up for only a short amount of time, or whether it may be a bootleg video of something else that that may have run into a copyright issue. I remember one thing that comes to mind is that every time that Saturday Night Live comes on, for example, somebody will try to put up some bits from that week's show up on YouTube, and by YouTube, the next day, NBC has said, take them down.
And they disappear. Yes, and that could certainly be the case, but I gathered from the caller's description that these are relatively standard videos that would not be copyright removed, although that is certainly a possibility. And that's why I suggested he see for a particular one of some friend. He could even call someone up on the phone and say, I'm trying to go to this particular video. Can you do it? Mm-hmm. And if neither one of them can do it, then it really is no longer available, and he just needs to pick other videos.
How does YouTube pick featured videos? Are there actually living human beings that do that? Or
I would assume that it's actually living human beings.
So I would assume that stuff that may be fairly common, that it would be copywritten in one way or another. They would not pick it as a feature video.
I think that's true, because YouTube is certainly well aware of the legal ramifications, and anything they put right up in front as a featured video, they're going to be pretty cautious about.
Your questions for Peter Kimbrell on computers are welcome, whether it's hardware, software, internet, what have you. The number is 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's go now to line 2 in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes.
At one time there was hardware that would translate videotapes to CDs or put them on a computer. I don't see this in the stores anymore.
Videotapes such as VHS tapes or 8mm tapes?
Yeah, VHS or, I guess that's the acronym, isn't it?
Yes. Well, the standard tapes that you used to play in, videotape players and such back when those were used as opposed to DVD players.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I doubt that there are any single devices anymore that will do that. There are some I have seen online, and I don't know if they're still in the stores, some dual-purpose machines that have both a VHS, essentially a videotape player, and a DVD recorder in them, which will allow you to record internally directly. The problem with those is that they are neither a very good videotape player nor a very good DVD recorder, because they're kind of bottom line priced.
Mm-hmm.
But the other option, and I'm pretty sure there are still some of those out there, but they are certainly an endangered species. They are going to be disappearing. The other thing that you can do, there are a number of devices that are available that will take a standard video signal. So you could just take a VHS player, a videotape player that you've got, and instead of, or in addition to plugging it into a monitor, plug it into one of these devices that will simply record directly onto a DVD. I'm almost thinking of a brand of a device. It's escaping me at the moment, and it's a little device that's about the size of two paperback books that is simply a DVD recorder and will accept video coming in. It does the conversion of the video into a digital format and then records it onto a DVD, not requiring that you even run a computer, but you do have to have something to play the original tape in. It doesn't do that.
I've got a tape player, and I was wondering if there could be, I believe my video card actually has a TV in.
Quite possibly. A number of them do. And in that case, software could handle it on the level of the computer. To be able to do that and not have any errors in burning of the DVD, you need to either have a relatively fast recent computer or make absolutely sure that you're not running anything else at the same time, because there's an awful lot of processing that has to be done, taking up a lot of space to convert a standard analog videotape, whatever form it's in, into the form that can be then recorded on a DVD.
Well, that's the, let's see, a 2 gigahertz AMD chip.
That should be fine. You'd have you'd want to have a fair amount of random access memory, at least 1 gigabyte. 2 would be better.
Yeah, it's only got a half gigabyte of memory. So.
That might be pushing it a little bit, but it would probably work all right, and you need a fairly large amount of space on the hard drive, because you won't be burning it directly to the DVD. It all has to be processed onto the hard drive, and then software that can, and you can find a lot of this software, and much of it is free or very inexpensive shareware.
Well, I have Nero.
Yes, Nero is well reputed. It comes with a lot of computer systems that have DVD burners in them. And it's one of several brands. And if you want more capability, you can actually go to their site and update their professional version for, $50 or something like that.
All right.
Could I mix memory? I've got two 250 what are they called now? Not SIMs, but whatever they are now.
Well, possibly.
Could I put a gigabyte one with those?
There are three things you have to check. One, are there available slots for memory
there
in
is.
Your computer? Two, is the physical format the same? Because there are different shapes with different number of pins, so obviously they would have to fit.
Mm-hmm.
And three, you have to make sure that the memory chips you would put in there have a speed access specification that is at least what the computer requires, because if these memory chips are from a machine that's perhaps 5 or 6 years older, they may not be able to function and read and write their memory as quickly as the computer requires. One good site that we often use, and they actually have a memory tester that you can download, is crucial.com. www.crucial.com, and that will actually, if you download a program from them, it's their memory checker, will tell you how many slots you've got, how fast the memory has to be, what kind it will be. They'll offer to sell it to you too, but that's actually a pretty good way of determining what's there, and then you can look at the memory chips that you've got, and they will generally have some indication. For example, if it's something called SDRAM, it might say it's PC100 or PC133, and you could not take older PC100 and stick it into a PC133 expecting machine and have it work.
All right.
Well, thanks very much.
Yes.
You've been very helpful.
Good.
And thanks for your call. Once again, Peter Kimball is our guest on the Computers and You segment of the Afternoon Magazine. And our numbers to call, 333-9455 and 1-800-222-9455. Let's take a call on line one right now in Charleston. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hello.
What I've got is a computer that, during the process of upgrading from one computer to another, data was supposed to have been transferred. And what wound up happening is they grabbed all the files that were in my documents and transferred those.
Uh-huh.
But they forgot that some of the data that I had goes back to files from Lotus 1-2-3, Quattro Pro, various older programs like that. After that, the older computer was put into a different use, and I'm wondering, is there any program I can use to go back onto that older computer and try to fish up some of that data?
Well, when you say the older computer was put to a different use, what do you mean?
Some stuff was erased, but when I was playing with that computer and looking, at they had set it up so that it would be able to use for the internet.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Outlook Express or something like that. Or
yeah, that's
Outlook.
One program that might have been installed.
Yeah, I actually found some of my older files.
Well, yes. If you can find them, you can certainly copy them. What you're looking for are just the data files. You've got two problems, potential problems. One is getting the actual data files themselves, the files that contain the information you want to retain. And if you can find them on the older computer, then you simply need to store them in some way. I don't know if the older computer can burn CDs or not, or if it's got a diskette drive. We could go that route, assuming the newer computer can read diskettes. If the older computer has a USB capability, you could use a thumb drive. Somehow you need to store the information from the old computer, and they're probably, if they're older files such as Lotus and such, they're probably not very large altogether. So they need to
gone in and tried to use like DOS commands.
You should be able to look for them, assuming that it's the old computer is still running Windows or a version of Windows. You should be able, whether or not you are using. Whether or not the files are created with Windows or not, with the Windows File Explorer can certainly find everything that's there. So you don't have to actually search for them with DOS. You could actually just choose Windows Explorer, and you would be able to see them all.
When we've tried to use the Windows search functions, it doesn't bring up those files. And then when I'm trying to use DOS commands, it hasn't found them either.
So you have found them in what way, then, the ones that you actually are locating?
Oh, the ones I located, they were just basically, you know, you, how did I get into that? I think I was in Tools, Internet Options, and went in and found some material that way.
Well, if the files are actually, if you're actually using Internet Options, it's possible that that the names of the files are still stored. Assuming that you're doing a search, you have told the system under Windows Search, for example, there are advanced options. Make sure it's looking for hidden files. Make sure it's looking inside all subdirectories. Those are a couple of checkboxes. And if it doesn't find them there, then any place else you're seeing them is presumably just an echo. The files are no longer there. It's just a memory of those files being there because Windows Search or the, for that matter, DOS, but it's a more difficult with DOS, will, if you've got the settings proper set properly, look for all files, hidden or not, and look in all subdirectories. If the file's there, that will find them. You also need to make sure that if there are multiple, the hard drive may have been divided into multiple logical hard drives, like a drive C, a drive D, etc. You'd need to make sure you check all of those.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
And thanks for your call. Let's move ahead to line number 3 in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Great program. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I've got two questions. Like almost everyone else in Champaign, I had Insight as my provider.
Yes.
And then I was changed to Comcast.
Yes.
Now, ever since we've been on Comcast, the email feature won't stay on. We keep having to sign on every time we go back to our email, whereas under Comcast, of course, once you put it up, it tended to stay up. There is no phone number for Comcast, so we're having difficulty getting any answer to this problem. Do you know of anything we can do?
This is using the you're reading the email via the Comcast website.
Right.
I have not looked at that directly. I'm also among those who have made the change of necessity from Insight to Comcast. That has not been an issue for me. There are two ways, essentially, that you can deal with email.
Okay.
One of them is, as you have been doing, via a website. The website that Insight used was, of course, different than the website that Comcast is using.
Wait a minute. I'm getting music all of a sudden.
Oh. I don't
Hang
think
on.
It's...
Did you turn something on?
I think we're all
that's
set.
Better.
We should be all set.
Okay.
The problem is not in your set. It was with us.
All right.
We will control the vertical. And so the website mail or the web-based mail, there may or may not be a setting someplace in preferences for Comcast to allow it to be persistent. A lot of websites intentionally, for security purposes, after a particular amount of time, log you out.
Right.
If that's what Comcast is doing and they don't have a setting to allow you to change that, which they may well not, then you're sort of stuck with that. There will be some way, I have not looked for it yet, you may not be able to call them, but there should be some contact Comcast, send them email, and within a day or so, usually you get something back, so you could ask them. The other solution, however, to avoid that entirely is to use what's called email client software. That would be something like Outlook Express, or it could be the full Outlook if you're using that. Or
that's what we used to have, yes.
And if you install that, then it's up to you. You can leave that up and running as long as you want, and it will never shut down because it's not a web application. It is your program running on your machine that at times you specify, maybe even every 5, 10, 20 minutes or so, will go out and ask the email service at Comcast, got an email for me, and if so, it brings it and makes a copy on your machine.
Oh, great. Okay, so
that's what those programs like Outlook Express and Eudora do.
So I could bring up Outlook Express and then specify Comcast
yes.
as my server?
And there is an almost certainly, because there was with Insight, and I'm sure there is with Comcast, a help file someplace that will say these are the settings you need to specify for making Outlook Express communicate properly with the Comcast email service.
Okay. Thank you. Now I have one other short question. I keep getting a pop-up that says load disk space, and it tells me I'm running out of disk space on my HP recovery or D drive. And it says to free space on this drive by deleting older unnecessary files, click here, blah, blah, blah. But I go to that and there's nothing there, and I don't know how to decompress. I have decompressed the D drive, and I still keep getting this pop-up.
Well, one of the things that you can do, and the D drive, the reason that you would be getting that on the D drive is not quite clear. Generally, you get that message when the hard drive that Windows is using for its temporary files that it needs while it's running begins to fill up. And I'd be a little surprised if that had been pointed to the D drive, but it's certainly possible. What you can do is there is a utility. You're running Windows XP, I presume.
Yes, yeah.
There is a utility that is available, and I don't have an XP machine in front of me here, so I can't quite tell you where it is, but it is going to be under Start Settings Control Panel and probably under either Computer Management or Administrative Tools.
Okay.
And it is a utility that will be entitled something like make free up disk space or make more disk space available, or it's not compressing.
Would it be a defrag?
No, it's not the defragging, defragmenting. Right. It actually is a program, and if I could tell you what it was, I would, but I just don't have it here, that will look for the common places where files are located that you really don't need anymore, such as a lot of internet temporary files, such as other temp files that have been downloaded, and it will give you a list of all of those and saying, here's the amount of space we could save if these are deleted or compressed, and it doesn't do it until you tell it to go ahead and do so, but that is what I would suggest.
All right. Well, thank you. You've been very helpful.
Good luck.
And thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Let's move ahead to line 4 in Gays, Illinois. Good afternoon. You're with Peter Kimball.
Thank you. Hopefully this is an easy question. I live out in the boondocks in a rural area, and there's no DSL available through the phone company. I live too far out to get cable. I'm going nuts with a dial-up connection. I've got to get something faster and stable. What are my options?
Well, there are a number of options. One of them is, are you a cell phone user?
Yes.
Do you have good cell phone service out where you are?
No. Oh,
well, okay. So that's the option I was going to mention that a number of people I know have been very happy with is subscribing through Verizon or other companies. Their web access and then just plugging essentially it's a cellular access to the internet that could be plugged in to the appropriate port, a USB port or something else on a computer. If that's not possible, then there are some other options available. Basically, your options are going to be to receive it somehow via radio, and that could either be, we had a caller a little bit earlier who was using Hughes satellite service. I believe most of the time that is the download comes to you via a satellite dish, and rather than having to send the information back up, you communicate in the other direction via telephone because you don't send nearly as much stuff away from you as you do receiving. So that would be a possibility. There is something, let's see if I can remember how this is. I want to say Prairie iNet, but I'm not entirely sure that that's what it is.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Directory services in Iowa, yes. And so Prairie iNet is another service that you could take a look at. You may or may not be within range of them, but they do handle a lot of more rural areas. Mm-hmm. So that's something that you might want to check with. The other thing you could do is a Google search, as long as it may take from your dial-up, and just include something like, what part of the state are you in? I didn't quite recognize
I'm between Mattoon and Gaze, Illinois.
Okay, so
and
Mattoon
is... a little dip.
So, well, that's not going to help either. Mattoon is probably the closest, then, to you of a medium-sized town.
Right.
So you might try the search for something like Mattoon, internet access, satellite radio, you know, just various combinations of those and see what's available. And I don't know if the one I mentioned, Prairie iNet, which is through a lot of Illinois and Iowa, would be available out there or not. But it's that's certainly a place to start.
Okay, so there's no easy answer.
There's no easy answer. Satellite will work, but it's a little bit more expensive as long as you have a view of the... you know, southern sky from where you are.
No, there's trees.
yes.
Because even though there's just a little bit of wind today, I can't get my satellite TV to work.
Okay. So, well, the other thing you could do, if you're in a dip, you could probably build a small tower and put the dish up there. That would solve your television reception problems as well. But none of that's unfortunately going to be very cheap.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
So you could probably, you know, so her options, I guess, would be, well, the cell phone is a little spotty, but you might be able to find some, you know, some company that has decent range.
The people I was mentioning are in an area of Mahomet, which has got good cell phone service, but outside the range of either DSL or cable.
Right. And so they just get cards that they
the little cards if it's a laptop, or you can deal with that with another adapter. The other option, and that is of course a radio based cell phone, and the others are radio based. If you can't get a wire, you got to do it by radio, and that could either be through a satellite or through something that's a bit more local, such as
Prairie iNet. And Prairie iNet still use the antennas that they put on top of grain elevators.
Whatever they
can
find that's tall. But the caller who was down in a dip has a disadvantage. She might not get the FM signal from WILL very well either if she's in a dip and there's land between her and the tower.
Right. We've got time for one more call. Let's go to line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hello. Yes, I think what you were trying to think of a while back was the clean disk feature, and I believe it's accessible from the properties menu.
Clean disk. Okay, thank you. That does sound good.
And I have a problem, which I suspect you can't fix. It's with AT&T. I used it for years using Eudora and Thunderbird, and my mail actually comes in PrairieNet.
Uh-huh.
And it worked fine. But now AT&T wants all outgoing mail to be verified, that it's actually you who are sending it out.
Yes, as a spam reduction move.
Except they have no way that you can actually verify. I've gone to their website several times, extremely confusing, and where the person who's explaining how to use it tells me there should be a button to verify it's not there. They seem to have changed it recently. I created a new log on for my wife, which works, but again, verification is required, and I cannot load that website. I have no trouble loading any other website in the world.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. I may not be able to give you my only advice would be to at some time when you're very calm and relaxed,
mm-hmm.
And can put up with a lot of extra time and frustration, and you've got a speakerphone handy, try calling AT&T again and take the time to walk through them, and hopefully you'll get to walk through the problem with them, and hopefully you will get a technical support person who will be helpful and be able to figure out what's going on. But
yeah.
I don't see any real good options. You could try doing, the fallback searches online for similar problems with AT&T verification problem,
mm-hmm.
and see what sorts of postings other people have put up about that sort of a problem. But it's something that, unfortunately, you may have to resolve with AT&T.
I suppose I could resolve it by using Gmail or Yahoo Mail.
Which is certainly viable as well, but yeah. Then you have the problem, of course, of updating your email address with folks. But
right.
Who knows if AT&T is going to be your email provider. There is an advantage of things like Gmail or Yahoo Mail in that it could be more permanent.
Yeah. Well, Thunderbird was fine because I was storing everything on my hard drive,
yes.
which is where I really want things. I have some botanical
right.
mm-hmm. email that goes back for maybe 10 years.
Well, and the other possibility is whatever the account is, you could use, if not Thunderbird, you could certainly use one of the local, like Eudora or Outlook Express or something like that.
All right.
So.
Thanks for your call. We appreciate it, and we appreciate all of our callers this afternoon who gave us some good questions, some challenging questions for Peter Kimball. And Peter, I guess you're going to be here next month.
Yes, in the middle of the summer, July.
All right. We look forward to hearing from you again. It used to be an every 2-month job for you now, and... You're twice as present here on AM 580.
That's right, and so that gives me twice as much to think about.
All right, we'll challenge you next month, Peter Kimball
okay.
from the Fast 3 Consortium at Center for Teaching Excellence at the U of I.